Hey everybody, welcome to the Faith and Fandom podcast. We are recording live today so that we can come back to this. It'll be on Facebook now, obviously, but it will also be on the Faith and Fandom podcast channel. You can go to faithandfandom.podbean.amazon, iHeartRadio, Spotify, iTunes, kind of all about, I don't even know, like maybe 3 months ago, you know, people are, they're not wrong, but the idea is that there is still some good going on this year. 100 good things that didn't suck in 2020 that just weren't outright terrible. Talk about some stuff with that. Before we even get to my list, LJ just dropped a book, LJ's book. We're going to talk about 100 things that didn't suck in 2020. And Timmy and
I am one of the, or the editor. But I'm the editor of Faith and Fandom. Any mistakes that you catch, they're my editor on the planet. But it's been just so much fun being able to just go along with Hector in this. Started out. It is, because I was a kid and you were like...
Hey, Brandon.
And you're...
No, bro.
Yeah, well, I mean, well, it was 14 years ago. But anyways, come on, cool stuff, especially since he got me into a lot of this fandom stuff. Like, he and we were just like, hey, here's Fire Emblem 10, and it didn't work. Like, put it into my Wii and it didn't work. But the opening DVD thing.
Oh, yeah.
And so you rented it, you had like an extra one, and you heard that I was Super Smash Brothers. But anyways, you got it for me, and then ever since, I now played like a lot to Hector there.
So if you missed the first episode list, the Sonic the Hedgehog movie.
Excellent.
Didn't suck. Mm-hmm. Bob Goff's Dream of Your Life.
That May I interrupt?
Go.
Sonic the Hedgehog. I know. You just said number two. But number one, I guess they're just siblings. Either Saperstein sibling. Doing. I love watching them not be terrible. Because they're actually pretty great. But like the first thing I think of when I think
We'll talk about Parks and Rec a little later in the thing, too. But also, that's one of the Matthew McDuck. Mm-hmm. But then you get John Ralphio as one of the...
Really?
The brothers, yes.
Oh, man, he's...
And he's fantastic. Anyway, three was Pokemon Go.
My brother just told me about that.
Yeah, so they've rolled those back. Four was Free Coffee, offering unlimited free coffee for the whole pandemic summer. That was beautiful. phenomenal. Animal Crossing, doing Animal Crossing stuff. Star Wars Season 7, or Star Wars Clone Wars, Disney Plus.
Still need to watch it. Still haven't. So, I was going to watch it with a group of friends, but then they all went like to different.
Can quote a 3-hour rap musical with no effort whatsoever.
It's kind of amazing.
And then the last 10 in the list of 100 things that didn't suck in 2020. Shameless self promotion, but just simple fact that Book 7 released.
Yeah.
Faith and Fandom, Book 7 released, and the newest one's my favorite one.
But this one is special. I think this one is, like, I feel like all initial read through.
Keep talking.
It was something special. Like, I thought that in 2000, did you start writing this in a late 19? I don't know when you started writing it. It released again.
July, like, just right after the early part of July.
Right, okay. It was 2019, I would say was worse than for me, personally.
2019 was one of personally. Mm-hmm. 2019 had the most opportunities and the most pain.
Yeah, it was terrible stuff. And then going into 2020, then suddenly COVID happened. It's like we were just, I felt like I was just starting to get, you were, like the way that you, that translated into your writing was just really cool. It was really, or whenever pastors write, you know, sometimes you start recycling the same things over and over again, right? But there was some like new stuff there, and showing how you personally grew. And that really showed up in Book 7, and had to show up in Book 7, because...
The fact that it went out at all was encouraging to me, because out of everything with mm-hmm. me with that, and, like, my debt, like, once I knew that Heroes Con, and I normally do, mm-hmm. like, you know, it was like, do I even write it right now? Does it even happen? Better from the process of it. The Ahsoka Tano chapter on Church Hurt. Helped me. You mentioned really liking the BoJack chapter.
Yeah. I mean, there's that one quote, that your relationship or something with rose tinted glasses.
All the red flags just look like flags.
I love that.
Yeah. Like, hey, bro, look at this. But no, like the BoJack chapter was powerful. With it, and you know, I've already got stuff kind of slated for an 8 if we go forward that way. But it still was a number one new release.
Yeah.
So.
Well, no one could go to cons. So.
The amount of physical volumes that I normally would have traded than what, because realistically, over the summer, I probably, and in person for 2020, I've sold, let's say, you know, it's a different bubble. But book 7 coming out was a big deal, and thank you for editing it in the middle of January and
June, man. But it was like, well, you extended it some because you're like, well, it doesn't have to be ready for cons anymore.
Yeah.
But so I was able, again, it was really, really good. I think this one was probably, like, if it was my favorite.
I still hunker down on 3, 5, and this one. Like, reread the stuff because I was in a bad season personally, and I don't want to reread my bad seasons. Coming out was a big deal in the face of everything else. And so if you were part of that and buying that, so that was number 11 on the list. And then number 12, I don't get to
choose. Oh, my goodness. Okay, so Ghost of Tsushima.
That's number 12.
Yeah, Ghost of Tsushima was such a surprise. You have as many games anyways. During the first three quarters, don't normally they all drop in the last game delayed. We really had like a long period where there wasn't new games coming out except like remakes. Like
I don't love it like I love to.
But like, so like I just, then there weren't any games in Samurai, and that was just really exciting. So yeah, we picked up a copy, and within just like the first day, just realizing that this was indeed a top-notch game. How do I explain it? Just some amazing things from the game that are kind of groundbreaking in my opinion. The camera mode is the best camera mode I've ever seen in my life. You can pause at any frame. You can turn on all these different filters. You can keep the wind going on. You can have like leaves swirling around you. You can change like it so that way, like you can be like a shadow. And so like you can pause at any time. You get to pet foxes in the game. You find these fox dens and you have to follow the fox around. And I found it really calming because, well, we had a lot of time. I think when Ghost came out, there was a 1 week quarantine that I had to do because someone on staff was exposed to COVID and their test came back negative. But while we were waiting, we all had to stay home. And so during that week, I remember just staying up super late playing through Ghost. And there was something really calming just about running around the map, going to every little question mark and seeing if it was like a bamboo strike or a hot spring or whatever. The combat there is very good, very Arkham-like. But it's kind of like a marriage between Arkham and Souls games. I'm not good at Souls games. I've never been good at Souls games. I don't find them very fun, in my opinion. I still have yet to find a Souls game that I really like. And I know that's an unpopular opinion. I don't hate on y'all who play Souls games. I think they're great, but I'm just not good at them. But I feel like some of the combat that they put in there with the timing and how it can be a little unforgiving at times, and the learning curve and stuff, it was a good combination. Now, it's not perfect. There's some bugginess to it. I would love to, at some point, if you were to make a book 8, I probably would want to write a chapter on it because there's some really cool themes.
Start writing it. That'll make sure it'll be a book 8.
Some themes in like on revenge and doing things the proper way, because this isn't a spoiler, but one of the big themes of it is Jin, who is a samurai, having to confront how he's supposed to take on these Mongolians. And so you start to do things that are not the samurai way, like going up and assassinating someone from behind them, or other things, using poison, things like that, of that nature. And that contradicts the samurai way, right?
Right. And honor is your prison.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it's really cool to see Jin go down this path of having to pick whether he stays true and potentially fail, or if he starts to use these other methods. And like the first time I assassinated someone, you literally have a flashback to your uncle telling you, like, when we kill someone, we look at them straight in the face, and then it cuts to you choking someone out as you're struggling on the ground. It's a crazy thing. So not only did they do some good storytelling, but it's also a beautiful game and great combat. And so yes, I will let you borrow my PlayStation and let you play through it, because I would love for you to experience Ghost of Tsushima.
You're so happy. All right, so that is definitely on the list. Another thing that and that's the thing, I wanted it like before I realized it was a PS exclusive. I literally went to GameStop to pre-order it, and I'm like, oh no. And so that was, you know, one of those GameStop chronicles for our location. Another thing that was pretty amazing during 2020 was Avatar and Korra dropping. And we, you know, I'm not going to gush too much on Avatar. There's actually a whole...
an hour-long podcast.
There's an hour-long podcast of Tammy and I both gushing about how good Avatar was.
But you, but we can update on Korra because
Korra. We can update on Korra. But if you want to hear an hour of us talking about Avatar The Last Airbender, please go back a few podcasts. It's on Facebook Live somewhere. Or in the Facebook videos there as well. But we just finished Korra. As a family, and I enjoyed Korra. I feel like Korra doesn't get a... Avatar had such a solid ending, like a this was perfectly planned ending, that Korra's abrupt, not a cliffhanger, but just like a... Because it's more like a I'm walking down a moderate hill. There's not a point where you feel like, you know... I passionately need to know what happens next, because I think that's one of the things is like there's such a drive and passion and purpose in the tight storytelling of Avatar that the apathy and lack of vision of Korra's character in general like made it harder to like really invest, because it's like it was less of I have to do this specifically to save the world, and more like I don't want to be here, and life is hard.
I feel like every season finale of Korra was a better ending
than the actual ending. Yes, yeah. Every season like, finale of Korra up until the last season was a dope ending.
Yeah, like and like if they could have, like if they wanted to end it at season three, they could have. I mean, I would have wanted Korra not to be in a Well, I guess it might be. Can I spell it?
It's like a decade, bro.
Yeah, sure. For Korra not to be in a wheelchair. But with Jinora getting her tattoos and everything, and the return of the Air Nation, and if they would have just given Korra like a little bit of a better, you know, then that could have been an ending. But they like Chuck season sevened it, or Chuck season I don't remember the last season of Chuck
five.
It's five. Chuck season fived it and just kept pushing it forward. The last season, I think, is very good, and I think the star of that are the Beifongs and Kuvira. Yeah. I didn't care about Korra, quite frankly, that entire season. I feel like she was still making the same mistakes that she's been making the entire series, but I saw amazing character growth, even in Kai, who was just, like, only introduced the season before. Jinora, who is just owning everything at that point. Asami, great. All of the Beifongs, Bolin having to choose family over, you know, super, all of these things, and then Korra's just kind of there.
That's one of the things, though, that, you know, I think is a great idea and theme is that just because you have power, just because you have privilege, just because you have opportunity, doesn't automatically make you the hero. That there are people with a lot less doing a lot more. And Korra's still having to learn to deal with her stuff. And I mean, that was, too, like a really solid concept of having to actually deal with your past, deal with your failure. Like, honestly, for me, one of the best moments, like, was what was the her, like, arch dude that poisoned her and
Zaheer, he's my favorite. Zaheer
actually helping her get rid of her block was one of my favorite moments.
Anything with Zaheer is a favorite moment of that series.
Zaheer was dope. Zaheer was a fantastic villain. I personally, for me, seeing Iroh again obviously is like that's my bread and butter. I love me some Iroh.
I loved watching a favorite of the series as a whole. I loved watching the first Avatar.
And Brandon, who's watching this, said that Sokka, what happened to him? Like in there, like Sokka, he died as a council member. Like we don't get a clear.
We don't know when he died. Yeah, we see him in flashbacks in season one, but apart from that, he's never mentioned. There was that thing that maybe Lin's dad is Sokka, but that's never ever fleshed out. And we find out that Sue's dad is not Sokka. And so there's... I recently heard that in one of the comics, you might even be able to comment on this better since you've read them.
I've not read any Korra comics.
Okay, well, this has to do with... is it true or do you know that... Suki, that she died young. Like I remember seeing that somewhere, I think on TikTok. where it was revealed that she actually also died pretty young, and then Sokka just never pursued anyone else after that. But regardless, not having Sokka, but having everyone else, how old then is Zuko? Like, he is ancient, but he's still firebending with his dragon.
And, yeah.
The fact that Zuko and Toph and Katara are there, but it was sad not seeing Sokka.
Well, the fact that we get a couple flashbacks with Sokka.
Yeah, I mean, but they're so small. I would have loved to see just a little bit more of him being a boss, because he is a boss. I love the non-bender just rising to be someone amazing, and I don't feel like Asami, ever fit that role.
Asami
well.
Never rose to top, yeah. or to Sokka level. No. But the one of my favorite things, though, is in the Avatar comic books, and there are three sets that I read. There's The Promise, The Search, and but in one of those, Sokka says, I am a bender. I'm a motivational bender. I bend motivation.
There you go.
And that's like, they're like, sorry, Sokka, this is for benders. He's like, I'm a motivational bender. So that's one of my favorite things. But on time, let's
yes.
do this. Avatar dropping and Korra dropping during 2020, but especially during quarantine season, was a game changer. My kids loved it. I loved it.
It was an invaded TikTok. Like every,
yes.
It seemed like every other swipe was another Avatar meme or something. Everyone watched through it.
My most popular TikTok out of all my stuff is me being sad about my Iroh tea mug breaking.
Oh, really?
Like, I'm like laying on the table in front of my like broken Iroh mug with some sad music playing, and people like went nuts with it. So,
yeah.
But yeah. So, Avatar and Korra dropping during that season was super huge. Mm-hmm. And then let's see, Onward dropping on Disney Plus, but not only Onward dropping, but Onward dropping early and Onward dropping free.
Yes.
Was a big deal because, with everything with Mulan, people were like, $30? But like, Onward not only dropped on Disney Plus, it dropped earlier than planned. And Onward was wonderful.
I cried.
I've got dad issues, bro.
Oh, that's right.
Like, I've got dad issues. My dad didn't die early per se, but my dad was in a coma for the last 14 years of his life. So I really didn't have a relationship with my father in that capacity anytime after the age of 13. So, Onward was a lot of family issues and stuff like that.
Holland.
Yeah, Tom Holland and Pratt were like phenomenal in that.
Phenomenal. Like I have yet to see them in a role that I didn't think that they did phenomenally. Man. And then always having them together is always a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a wonderful movie. I enjoyed it. But the fact that when it dropped, I think companies that went out of their way to give us good things when the world sucked deserve love.
Yeah.
And them giving us Onward when they did was so encouraging. Mm-hmm. And, my kids have loved it and things like that. And I don't know. It just meant a lot to me to get it the way we got it.
Yeah.
So
I don't know how Pixar is able to manage it. When I first saw the preview for it, I'm always with Pixar. I'm always like, how was that fun? How does that work? How are pulling legs around for an entire movie a good idea? But again, they did a phenomenal job. Loved the movie.
I don't know if you noticed the pattern, but this is Disney's model for what they do. They give us princess movie, princess movie, princess movie, boy movie, princess movie, princess movie, boy movie. Because guess what? What was the previous boy Disney movie? Like boy-centric.
Big Hero 6.
When did Big Hero 6 drop? What pre-
Frozen.
It dropped right after Frozen. Guess when Onward dropped?
Right after Frozen 2.
Right after Frozen 2. Yeah. So we went from everything from Frozen, Big Hero 6, everything that came in between.
Mm-hmm. And then Frozen 2.
Then Frozen 2, and then Onward.
Yeah.
So Onward is the next generation of Big Hero 6 to me. Yeah. Like, as far as, like, movie that it's, like, boy-centric, it's actually encouraging of building familial relationships. Mm-hmm. Not that there's a problem with female-centric Disney movies, but, like, there just aren't a lot of young men-centric things where it's actually not about romantic pursuit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because almost any time you have a young man in, you know, animated films, it's, you know, I'm pursuing the girl.
Sure. And I think you see that more often in Japanese stuff, like in shonen. Like, you see it in anime all the time. But, like, America doesn't have that kind of, like, I feel like it's not as prevalent as it is in, like, Japan.
Yeah. Last thing, watching the Studio Ghibli movies, they're so much less about, you know, boy gets the girl gets the boy thing, and a lot more of like, hey, I'm going to endure your life and make you better because of our spiritual connection. Peace out. And yes. It's just like, so I enjoyed that about Onward dropping early. And then I'm going to skip ahead and we're going to swap these out. But so we're going to say a number 15 is, since you mentioned the whole shonen thing, let's talk My Hero.
Oh, we're going to talk about My Hero? Okay.
We're going to talk about My Hero.
Because the movie comes out in English here in the United States the day after my birthday. So, I'm excited.
Well, and that's the thing. The last movie I really did anything for was the second Big Hero movie in theaters this year. Mm-hmm. I dressed up in Fat Gum cosplay, and Rosa dressed up as Ochaka, and we promoted a Comic-Con at the launch of the second My Hero movie in theaters.
There you go.
And so that was a fun movie in general, but honestly, like, My Hero's cultural impact and their storytelling is just continuing to grow. And one of the great things is the series and the newer movie actually are deviating from the manga.
Mm-hmm.
Not in a bad way, but they're actually tying things together in a better way.
Yeah.
In some capacities. So it's really been nice to see that. I've just been encouraged by the entity that is My Hero and everything that's come out of it. I didn't play the new My Hero game.
Yeah, I haven't played that yet. I think it's on Game Pass, and so I'm going to try downloading it.
But I enjoyed the first one, but not enough for $40.
Yeah.
And honestly, I don't have enough time to play the games I'm playing right now, so yeah. It's one of those things. But My Hero's continual presence, and even in the manga, that's the manga I'm jumping into. I'm finishing up Demon Slayer.
Yeah.
And I'm going to jump to that and finish out.
Season 4 of My Hero with the arc with Eri in it. Starting with rescuing her and then going into the music festival. I bawled during the music festival when you see those dark wings surrounding her. And then Jiro was singing and then they have that little flash. I'm getting chills too. They have that flashback and they're saying, like, you can do, like, you can be a hero with your music and stuff like that. You can do whatever you want. And then when she's smiling, oh boy, I'm going to get emotional. And Mirio is saying, look, sir, she's smiling. Oh my gosh. Like, that's got to be one of the highlights. The end. The movie was good, but I think that entire season 4 arc was just so done. It was done so well, exceptionally well. Like, I didn't care about Gentle Criminal at all. I just cared about the music festival and stuff. And then the overhaul arc, man, that was good. That was good storytelling.
I enjoyed the Gentle Criminal stuff pretty well. But, you know, they made in the show, the whole music festival is much better than what we get in the book.
Mm.
But in reality, a music festival can only be so good in a book.
Yeah.
Comparatively speaking. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Hero 2 song actually slaps a bit.
Oh yeah, it's on the Spotify starred list. Quite frankly, it's so good.
It's on our. I own it, so yeah, I paid for it. So My Hero continued to excel in 2020. So that was something really dope with that. So on TV stuff, just still sticking with it. Another thing that didn't suck in 2020 was with COVID, everything happening. There was a lot of people doing specials and stuff. And so one of my favorite specials, and it wasn't a big deal, was that they did a Parks and Rec special, and it was basically a Zoom call.
Yeah.
But they actually did stuff in character of the characters actually like calling to encourage each other, and then everybody got together and sang 5,000 Candles in the Wind.
Yeah.
And that was just crazy encouraging to me.
Yeah, at Camp Grace, we actually used that as a reference to when we were working on a project called Camp Grace at Home. And we also, as we're going into like, how do we reach these kids? Like one of our staff members, Mariah, was just like, hey, Parks and Rec is doing a special on this. We should watch it and see if we can get any ideas of how to promote our stuff. And I'm like, okay, this is awesome. And so watching it through and how they did it, I mean, I think that was a really cool thing for them to do. And yeah, we used some of that as ideas going into our next media plan.
And like, honestly too, like, and it was a very, very subtle thing. The big highlight of the Parks and Rec reunion was, Candles in the Wind. But like my favorite low-key part of the Parks and Rec reunion is that, I don't even know if it was just on Facebook or whatever else, but they actually caught up with Paul Rudd, Bobby Newport Jr., mm-hmm. and they asked him how was he dealing with the pandemic. He's like, there's something happening?
Yes.
I mean, it was just like a simple thing, and it just like made my heart happy to see that. So just being, I need to add this for later.
It definitely had some good writing in it, that's for certain.
It definitely did.
And good writers over there.
And so that was a fun thing to do. And if I'm not mistaken, like Rob Lowe and Ann Perkins actually are together.
In real life?
Yeah. Like I, if I'm not mistaken, this is not claiming that it's fact, but I think I saw that that's reality.
Yeah, someone fact check that if you're watching. Yeah. Is Rob Lowe and what's her name?
Rashida Jones.
Are they?
I think they actually live together. Because if I'm not mistaken, what I saw about the thing was that they were just in separate rooms.
Really?
Yeah, doing it. But I could be wrong. But if I'm not mistaken, I just thought
I love cool. both of them. So yeah, I think they're both awesome in their own right. So more power to them.
So that was super dope. And let's go ahead and jump, since you mentioned it in what you were just talking about, Camp Grace at Home. Talk about that. Camp in a Box.
Yeah. So one of the big things at camp that we were trying to figure out is how do we minister to our young people at a distance? Because, well, we couldn't do summer camp. That was a really big heartache for us not to be able to be in person with the kids. Like, we pour at least, I can't put a number on it, how many hours we pour into making a summer awesome and how many hours we prepare ourselves to work during a summer to ensure that it stays awesome. And then suddenly that was, I mean, we tried to hold up for as long as we could, and then it was taken away. And so we wanted to do something else, and so what we did, we filmed a whole bunch of videos. I asked one of my friends, Luke, to make a rules video for the book, for our little, we sent kids a book with supplies for crafts and activities and sermons and other things that they could go online to do. And some of my favorite things was just watching some of the young people that we were able to get in, like really make this their own. Like making a really fun rules video, making some fun skits that we put out for the kids. Watching every staff member be involved in some way, form, or fashion, because that was one of the big pushes. We wanted everyone to be involved. And so whether it was them telling a lesson, or whether it was them doing a sermon or whatever, or just talking to the kids through a YouTube video, that was something really fun that we got to do.
And as a parent, okay, I saw this from a double-edged vantage point. I'm the chairman of the board for this ministry, so I look at everything as like, does this suck and how can we make it better? And then when we first pitched the idea of Camp in a Box, I thought it was a good idea, but I didn't think it would be a great idea. Not that I have to like stamp everything to think this will be phenomenal, but I trusted y'all to do your thing. But as a parent and, you know, as a board member as well, looking back, you guys basically got kids a metric ton of theological and fun content, a shirt, a cup, a bracelet, a craft stuff, all these things. You got them all that for like $20-some, like $25?
Yeah, $25 is what we sold the box for. And I mean, it costed us just over 15 to make it. And 16, so it was about 16 something at cost everything. To put all that stuff together, and then but that doesn't include other things like it was hard to figure out what the paper costed and what the ink costed, but just the physical stuff, it was just about $16 of physical stuff that we put in, minus like the box itself and the paint that we used to spray on the boxes. And because we weren't really trying to, we wanted to make a little bit off of it because we didn't have summer camp, but when we went into our first meeting, we're just like, we don't want to make this expensive, we want to make this affordable for all of the people. And so we went to work looking at the best deals that we could get, like getting things in bulk and And Caitlin had so much fun putting together all these different crafts and then having videos of her putting them together. And you'd be thinking like, well, $16 worth of stuff isn't a lot, but like there was a lot of stuff packed into that box. And it does just show like there was a lot of hard work put in from the staff to make it so that way it was a good value.
Like if we would have just paid $20 for a shirt and some swag, you know, you got your money's worth just in the material things alone. But I have to say the amount of content that y'all put out was so well done and so worth it. So like as a parent, that was one of the coolest things over the summer. As a ministry role, y'all just nailed it. And so I just thought it was pretty impressive. And so I thought that was one of my favorite things, actually, the whole camp in a box thing. One of my other favorite things for the year, though, was the trailer for Batman. So what were your thoughts on the whole Pattinson Batman, the trailer, the whole deal?
I was with some friends. I was sitting on the front porch with them, and I'm like, hey, guys, look at this. We have to see this. And, you know, it starts off slow. It was interesting. And, like, I know Pattinson is a good actor. I know he doesn't get enough credit. Any of the actors and actresses from Twilight don't get enough credit. No. Like, even Kristen Stewart, like, lately has been putting out some quality stuff. But regardless, Pattinson, though, like, okay, I'll give him a shot. We'll see. And watching just how gritty and how intense that trailer was, it's got me excited. I'm ready to see it. I'm so glad it's not an origin story. I don't mind myself a good origin story, but how many times have we seen a Batman origin story?
Well, and according to what I understand, it's a year two story.
It's a year two story, yeah. There's that one part where he's just like messing up that one guy.
He's like, "Who are you?" And then she's like, 30 seconds of beat down, I'm vengeance. Like, okay!
Yeah.
Okay!
He's not sparkling in this movie. He's not glistening or whatever vampires do. He is...
Vampires don't do that. But no, that was like, I think that was a redeeming thing for a lot of people that had, a lot of people that were on the fence got off the fence. There's still people that are haters, but meh.
And I'll be honest, like, Ben Affleck's Batman was okay. Especially like, I feel like the Christian Bale Batman was really, really good. And part of it was because he was so quiet and dark and gritty, and he wasn't cracking a joke every so often, you know.
We only got jokes because of Whedon.
Yeah, we only got jokes because of Whedon. And so, like, it's almost jarring when you see Justice League Batman versus any other Batman. So I'm thankful to be going back to a true Dark Knight. So.
Yeah. All right, and here's another thing that I thought was really dope in 2020. You're a Downton Abbey fan.
Yeah.
I'm a Downton Abbey fan. My family loves it. We rewatched the series just recently. There was this really cool thing that happened this year. There was a Downton Abbey exhibit at the Biltmore.
Oh, really?
If you're familiar with the story of Downton Abbey, a lot of the story of Downton Abbey is lovingly modeled.
Is that where you went for that one vacation?
A lot of the Downton Abbey story is lovingly modeled off of real life things from the Biltmore.
Okay.
Like the Biltmore family actually has a daughter named Edith.
Oh, really?
And like the whole deal.
That's interesting.
So there's a lot of similarities, but one of the things they did was in the village of the Biltmore, they have the clothing museum.
Mm-hmm.
And they literally have every actual costume from the show.
Wow.
So you get to see everybody's wedding dresses like up front.
That's amazing.
You get to see Sybil's Jasmine looking outfit.
Mm-hmm.
Bro, I got emotional. Like I was like seeing Sybil's outfits, like seeing Carson and you've known this. Mm-hmm. Cause I was trying to make sure I didn't spoil anything from the movie, but you get to see Carson and Mrs. Hughes' wedding outfits.
Oh my goodness, yes.
And seeing all that, whatever. That was really cool, but then you go to the actual Biltmore area. In the Biltmore, there are some scenes from Downton in the Biltmore.
Really?
And that are just kind of floating around. And all of a sudden, look, this is from the whatever. But in there is a place in down in the Biltmore complex where they actually had the sets.
Wow. So that's so cool. Like,
and they had everybody's individual piece, and you could pick up the phone and have a conversation with the character. And you've been to like Universal Studios and stuff where the Harry Potter rides, mm-hmm. they'll hologram up and talk to you. Mm-hmm. You'll literally be in the hall, Carson.
Carson, yeah.
Yeah, and Carson will literally, excuse me, you need to be quiet. Blah, blah, blah. And like Carson will just pop around the corner and yell at you. But they had the full kitchen. Ooh. Like the servant's kitchen.
Mrs. Patmore was there?
They had the whole everything.
Yeah.
They had.
She's one of my favorites.
They had the stairs going up.
Okay.
Yeah. Like the servant's
like
stairs.
The bells and everything.
All the bells, everything. Mm-hmm. They had Carson's room.
Okay.
His little office. Mm-hmm. They had Mary's bedroom.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And they had all this stuff. So as a Downton fan, it was like the best.
That's a good vacation right there.
No? So we did that, and my kids were only on season 2 when we went.
Okay.
And so when we walked through the costume thing, it was like spoiler here, spoiler there.
Oh no! What did they find out about?
They saw some weddings, but then they hadn't seen Sybil die yet, and so they're like looking on the like cast photo for like there's like a giant mural. They're like, where's Sybil? Hey kids, let's go! and so the last thing I just want to hit up for this list is Inktober. You have thoughts on Inktober?
I love Inktober. Yeah, I am not an artist. My big like artistic month is November when I do NaNoWriMo National Novel Writing Month. I've been doing that every year, but before is Inktober, which they put out like 30 prompts. And artists everywhere, they'll, with ink, that's technically the rule, but they'll accept anyone really to do it with any kind of medium. But then they interpret the prompt with however they want to, and they'll draw a picture of it, and they'll post it to like Instagram with ink, with the hashtag Inktober. And so I have a couple friends who are doing it, and I love watching their progress. I love watching them. Some people just develop as artists. And also just seeing the interpretation of it. So like the first day was fish. And so like my sister-in-law did this beautiful picture of like a hook going in through someone's mouth and like hooking their heart because they were fishing for compliments or, you know, someone fishing
right.
for something. And then my neighbor Heavenly did one of her dog in a fish costume, right? So,
and I did Strong Bad.
And you did Strong Bad, so very different. And I saw another person, they did, I wish I could remember all of them. But the way that they interpret them is just so cool. And it spawned other things. There's another one that is prompt-based. I wish I could remember what it was. And then there's also, so my neighbor also was just like, hey, let's do one for cooking. And so
I made his graphic for that.
Yeah, yeah. And I know that he was working with you for some of it. Like tonight, I'm actually having dinner with some friends. And he's
so
like,
he made Cooktober, which has, you know, 31 individual meal prompts or dessert prompts. Yeah.
And it's boil and mash and sigma stew tonight. And so I invite him over for dinner and he's just like, hey, I'm going to bring some sort of potato. And I'm like, okay, great. That'll do really well for us. And so it's been very beneficial for me being his neighbor because he's made some pretty delicious brownies and cookies that I've been able to help him consume. And he hates leftovers. So win-win for me, quite frankly.
We've, and then like there are other ones like Arttober.
Yeah.
People doing different prompts and different things like that. And just to say this, because like someone on the Faith and Fandom page actually like, made some comments to the fact that Inktober is not a positive thing mm-hmm. because of the way that the guy who created it exploits artists.
Yeah, I did see that on the page. Can you comment more on that? I didn't.
I don't have a lot of information on that, but they mentioned that they had started another prompt-based thing called Pinktober.
Pinktober, yeah.
And but that's also a existing like breast cancer awareness thing. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, the name similarity, but like you know, I don't have the details on that, but, you know, obviously you need to go with your own convictions and deal with your stuff with that. But I've had a blast just being a part of that community, and mm-hmm. I've done some TikToks where I've actually, like, time-lapsed the drawings and stuff like that.
Yeah, so, one of my, probably I would put her in one of the most talented artists that I have, that's a friend on Facebook. She'll do time-lapse of her doing it. And just, I love these prompt-based or these months where there's a focus in it because of... it really does push artists to complete something. That's why I love November, because I really don't do any writing in October, because it's all preparation for November, and I'm able to do so much more because there is something else pushing you to create that isn't, well, it's just this big community, like this big national community or international community. And so seeing Inktober or any kind of, or Artober or however you, like whichever one you follow, just pushing artists to produce, sometimes it's not quality, sometimes just quantity art, but it's still pushing them to create. And any kind of encouragement to create, I think, is something worthwhile. And sometimes for artists who are in a rut, same thing with writers, and again, as I'm preparing for NaNo, I'm really just, or National Novel Writing Month, I'm really just thinking about this too. Sometimes it is quantity, and you can go back and make it quality, right? But sometimes it is just push yourself to complete something, push yourself to finish that piece of art, whether it's music or whether it is art, like visual art, or whether it's writing or poetry or whatever. Finish it, keep going, and get with a community that will push you. And that's why I love these months where it's like an entire international community that pushes you to create and pushes you to finish something. Even if it's not as good as you want it to look, it's still art, it's still content, it's still something beautiful.
Well, it's like, just even in my own house, my 12-year-old and my 7-year-old are both doing Inktober. And so, like, you know, I'll get home late and my daughter will be like, so what'd you do?
Yes.
And, or I like,
Rosa?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Rosa's like eyeballing, like, what did you do? And then like Carmen, like, with zero cares, says, look what I did. And it's like,
I love Carmen. Carmen's are always so, like, if it's fish, it's going to be a picture of a fish, you know?
Yeah.
I love watching Rosa's way that she interprets things, though. I think that's really cool. Yeah.
So it's been fun. And so, an honorable mention, just to say this, and we'll dip out of here for the day. My friend Heather Cameron, told us to add this to things that didn't suck in 2020. This is so her honorable mention. Lando Lakes has officially put out a cinnamon sugar butter spread. That's like the Texas Roadhouse.
Oh, really?
Cinnamon sugar honey butter thing.
Oh, shoot. Okay. Sold. Thank you for telling us that. I will look for it in Walmart. I have a new refrigerator because I just moved into a new house. That will be one of the first things I buy for that refrigerator. Thank
so
you.
So that is a honorable mention of things that didn't suck. So we're going to... through this will be on the Faith and Fandom podcast. If you're listening to the Faith and Fandom podcast, this is on Facebook Live, and you can check that out as we're moving forward. But thank you for being with us, and we're going to come back a couple different times between now and the end of the year to actually map out some more things that didn't suck.
There's a lot of things that didn't suck. Like
there is.
That was a lot of conference. We barely got through 10, didn't we?
Yeah.
Because we had 20 planned.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I was marking them out. And so we've covered 20 out of 100. And, you know, we're going to shift some more. So if you've had things that you think didn't suck in 2020, let us know. And we'll be glad to share with it and discuss it. But thank you for being a part of this and hanging out with us today. And we'll see you soon.